I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny.
Right. I was waiting for so long. The two beers I got out of the fridge, I went to go put back to get two colder ones. Thanks, Sebastian.
Ow. Just because you're talking about cold. It's so cold in my room right now that my laptop is very cold to the touch. So, like, I turned it on and it immediately shut off. So I was like, no.
Sebastian. Sebastian, you do know where I live, yes?
Yeah, but your shit seems to be working fine.
Well, yeah, because your houses are built for, like, air conditioning and ventilation. Our houses are built to keep...
Yeah, you know, comfort.
But, like, if I was to walk outside, it would be like, and I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this on the podcast before, it'd be like the guy getting out of the helicopter in The Day After Tomorrow. He just freezes because it's so fucking cold. I mean, there's people that live in colder places are like, Ed, pull yourself together. Not that anyone from those places is probably listening, but if they are, they'd be like, you fucking pussy.
I mean, I can't really sympathize. They chose to live there. They could leave.
Some people chose. Some people are, you know, forced. You know, like the gulag or some shit.
The gulag.
I'm going to choose to go to Russia and make a dick out of myself. So you want the gulag?
No, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, they chose Russia.
Don't I just, like, fight someone 1v1 and then I parachute back? No, that's literally not how it works in real life, you stupid son of a bitch.
But that's what I'm saying. They chose to make a dick out of themselves in Russia. They chose to make a dick out of themselves in warmer climates. At the end of the day, they chose there.
They did.
That's all, like, I'm saying. Choices.
Isn't there a women's basketball player? Like, she's actually prominent in the WNBA. She went to Russia with, like, weed in her backpack.
Mm-hmm. And because I heard about that, yeah.
Everything that's happened in Russia and America, like there was Biden tried to get her back, but, like, no, she's gone. Like, we'll never hear from her again. Like, that is absolutely mad. But I mean, like, you know, don't go to countries where that shit isn't, like, readily available. Don't bring your culture to countries where that ain't the ting, brev.
Yep.
It's not looking good, brev.
And yet another shot to the WNBA.
I mean, I'm not a fan, but is anyone?
I'm not a fan. I don't really think about it. It's cool. It's there. But then that's me with most sports.
I mean, I have an opinion, like, not on the WNBA, but women's football. The expectations of, like, immediate fan base, immediate clout, immediate, like TV viewership.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, like, we have Sky Sports over here. You have many over there. You got Fox, CBS, NBC,
ESPN,
all that kind of shit. I mean, like, it took actual football hundreds of years to get where it is now. Women's football has been around for about less than 20. It's been popular for less than 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying, I mean, starting a sport sort of today, maybe you would think it should be easier, it should be quicker to get, like, that kind of reputation, that kind of standing, but, like, you know, compared to what is already established, you know, that you, like, you, I'm not saying your sport ain't great.
Yeah.
You know, the England's women's football team is showing the men's football team how to do it, and fair play to them. And maybe someday they will get those numbers, but they're not getting those numbers now. But they're getting better. But it's just time. It's a game of patience.
Yeah.
No one's better.
Football
than,
is
no
definitely one of those games.
Yeah, no one's better than anyone, but, you know, look at NFL compared to football. Well, I guess for American fans, soccer, NFL compared to soccer, but for me, NFL to football. You've got the Super Bowl that America thinks is, like, the greatest goddamn thing on God's green earth, and, like, the world. Like, I'm gonna put, like, you can the NFL. The Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Championships. You can throw the Stanley Cup in there as well if you like. It's dog shit compared to everything ever. Like, hockey's just shit. None of them, all of them combined, do not match the numbers of the World Cup currently going on. Even one of the little games, the quarterfinals right now.
Yeah.
Some of these quarterfinal matches... and the semi-final matches, the final, the numbers this sport pulls in, the Super Bowl wishes, but it just won't, because America's problem is because it's very much American ideals, American views for Americans, whereas football is like culture.
Yeah, I think that's why it doesn't really wish it, because I'm pretty sure there's a majority. It's like, let's face, have like the commercials and like the support for the U.S. in the World Cup this year is like, I personally thought it was fucking stupid because they weren't going to get anywhere near the fucking final.
I mean, all these supporters I've seen on Twitter that were chatting large ones when you faced England a couple of weeks ago, I was like, okay, cool. Now that you're out of the World Cup, I'll see you guys in 4 years.
Yeah, I wasn't supporting them.
I know you.
I'm not a fucking idiot.
I was on Twitter and like some geezers were loud. They were loud. Like, I know Christian Pulisic is okay. He plays for Chelsea, but. Sheesh.
But to expect the U.S. to do well in a game that the country as a whole chastises on a regular fucking basis, it is beyond stupid. That is Trump level stupid. Well, there is nationalism, there's whatever the fuck that was.
There's a chance it could, there's a chance some clout's coming your way. I think Messi at the end of the year signing with Inter Miami. David Beckham's team. Well, he doesn't like.
Stupid.
I think David Beckham like is a founder and an owner of the team, but like he's not manager.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Well, it's a nice place to live compared to where Messi's currently playing, Paris, which is like just a hole.
I get that. I'm just like, you know, he's signing for the place to live, not for like career relevance.
Well, no, like he wants to be able to go somewhere where he can put him in for free, innit? Like he can look at the goal and the ball will just go in. Like
pretty much. Oh, challenge! Why would I want that? I'm already the fucking best. I'm already the GOAT, dude. I'm trying to chill.
Hey, like I'm showing big ones. England's doing all right, but yeah, France on Saturday. I don't know if you know the French team, but they have this player called Mbappe, and he's like,
I've seen the French. Yeah, they're intense.
He's already won a World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
He's already won everything there is to win in French Football Association, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'll call it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if PSG, they've come close to the UCL, the Champions League. But let's just say Mbappe's already won he's already won a World Cup. And some people considered the team he was with when he won was like the greatest French team of all time. But he's the only one still standing in that team today. Like, not because of like people, like other people retiring, but because they're not in the team anymore. Not in the team, they're injured. There was like a strew of injuries. So Mbappe's literally leading what some people are calling like the French B team. He's literally a one man army. As soon as you get the ball above midfield and it gets to Mbappe's feet, he can, you know, he just milks it for all it's worth. But at what point do you look at Mbappe already winning a World Cup and the other two names that even Americans will know, Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, they've never even come close. Portugal and Argentina have never even, I think they're the closest they've ever, no, Portugal are playing now. They're winning 2-0, last I looked.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of winning, Morocco beat Spain on penalties. Saw
that
today.
That was funny.
The fuck? Especially when like one of the commentators was going, oh, Spain's got this. Luis Enrique, the manager, said you can't even get into the Spain first team unless you do 1,000 penalties. Well, guess where that got him? Absolutely fucking nowhere. And I'm pretty sure Argentina, like, they've not even sniffed the quarterfinals in, like, like a long, long time. So, like, yeah. Portugal and Argentina are on their way. Portugal will have to beat Morocco. That's pretty much guaranteed win. So they're going to the semi-final. I think you're looking...
I don't know. They beat Spain. They beat Spain there. I think one
they
of the
beat
things
Spain
that, like...
on they beat Spain on penalties.
But they beat them.
They beat them. But they beat them. But, like, you know... Portugal are playing football. Morocco are playing like just tapper.
But that's the thing I've noticed with this World Cup. Like, there's a lot of fucking upsets. There's a lot of wins that really shouldn't have fucking happened. So it's I wouldn't say like, oh, you know, just because, especially after beating Spain. Yeah, they beat them in penalties, but a win's a fucking win. One team's moving forward, the other one's going home.
And
I'm just trying to figure out how we segue this
Japan
into the actual list.
Japan beat Germany earlier in this. I've got like a list here that I've been keeping track on. Let's take a look at some of the other ones. Saudi Arabia beat Argentina at the beginning of the competition. That was a massive upset. South Korea did beat Portugal, but Portugal had already gone through, so they were probably resting. Give me 2 seconds. Morocco beat Belgium, and most people went into this World Cup with Belgium in, like, they were up there. Like, they've got Kevin De Bruyne. Like, that guy literally runs Man City.
It's hard to predict in this cup because of how many fucking upsets there have been.
Yeah, but I'm putting money on it. France Brazil for the final.
I mean, it's not a bad bet.
But I think that's the safe bet though. But like what you're saying is, there's been so many safe bets that people got shit on.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time you went into the World Cup and Germany didn't make it as far as like the semifinal? They didn't even make it through the
knockout. As far as the cups that I've seen, yeah, no.
Yeah. Like they've always been one of the favorites.
They've always been scary good. Yeah.
Crazy. But you know, that's like it's the beautiful game.
And that's the thing, like looking at this World Cup, there's been like a lot of like you know, upsets and stuff. So I feel like there's more moments in terms of like that I feel like are gonna stand test of time more in this one than previous ones. Cause there's a lot that didn't really stand out, but like, you know, upsets and shit like that, that shit, you know, tracks, you know, speaking of
that
moments
drives,
though,
that drives word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, speaking of moments, that brings us to the topic of this episode. And I feel like we should get into it because.
Oh, damn. No, like, actually, that was a good segue. I was like, where the fuck is he going? I'm just here, like, I'm looking at my beer swinging. I've not had a sip of my beer in a while. Don't worry, everybody. I'm not on, no, 14.5% shit today. I'm on standard shit, 4.7. I'm a pussy off him. No, it's actually, you know, the pub we went to near, like, around, like, near my house, the one I could walk to?
Yeah.
The beer I always got, I actually found cans of that in a local superstore, so I bought some. So it's nice. it's like me and you are back at the pub, Sebastian, like a couple of months ago. It was great. It was so key. No, yes, today's episode. What are we doing, Sebastian? What are we doing? Tell them.
So we're continuing our look back at 2022, but this is a little bit different. We're not looking at anything like major. We're looking at the moments and movies that really stood out to us. And the way I kind of went about it was like, these aren't necessarily like my favorite movies, but these are just moments that are like, for one reason or another, they just stood out to me. And that's how I looked at it. I don't know how you looked at it.
I've got one or two moments from my movies of the year.
Okay.
Because you know, sometimes a favorite movie can be made from a singular moment.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, when you talk to someone who, someone who's watching the MCU, and you talk to them about Iron Man, what do you remember? You remember Iron Man brushing off the tank shell,
destroying the tank,
and then just walking away. It's fucking great. Mm-hmm. You know, and then like, what do you remember from like the first four? This drink was delicious.
Another.
You know, like, the MCU is literally built on moments. Even in MCU movies, there's great moments in them.
And honestly, you've set up my first pick, and just because you went first in the last one.
Let's do it. You get first dibs.
Like, you set it up so fucking perfectly. It's like, if I don't go, it's going to be ruined. So, my first pick is from Multiverse of Madness.
Okay.
And it is the intro of Professor Charles Xavier.
With the X-Men music?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Like, only eagle-eyed viewers got that one. Eagle-eyed listeners.
As soon as I heard it, dude, I felt a chill. I was like, oh, damn. Okay. And like, don't get me wrong, I liked John Krasinski as Reed Richards, but like, it was, let's be honest, it was a waste of a character.
We knew that was gonna happen.
And you know, I'm all for, you know, him spaghettiing away, but seeing Professor Xavier, classic yellow chair, green suit, and then the X-Men 97 theme under it as he came in, fuck me, dude. That was my favorite moment of that movie. Like, everything else was cool, and I enjoyed Doctor Strange, but that moment made it for me.
You enjoyed Doctor Strange? That's more than what most people seem to think on Twitter.
And that's fine. Like, I enjoyed it. There was a lot of stuff that obviously was really wrong with it, but overall, I had fun watching it. It was not Thor: Love and Thunder. That was a whole other thing. Like, it's. In terms of like the worst for me as far as this year, Thor: Love and Thunder is right there.
Yeah,
it was just such a letdown.
It, like, the more I hear about people hating on Thor, like, just the bigger the hole is being dug. Like, even Chris Hemsworth was talking about the other day. He was mentioning if he's going to do four again, it's got to be someone who, like, who has Thor's best interests at heart. And I was like,
yeah,
bro, you didn't name him, but sheesh. Thought you were broskies, dude.
Yeah.
It's like,
he,
you know,
he said, like, there needs to be, like, a complete tonal shift.
Yeah.
For him. And I, which is crazy to me, because I feel like, just because we're talking about it, I felt like Ragnarok nailed the perfect tone for him.
Yeah.
Like, where it was perfect. There was the perfect amount of, like, drama and family shit with the comedy that made sense. But it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what the idea for Love and Thunder was, but that could be for another fucking day. Right now, Professor Xavier was my moment. What is your first moment, my dude?
Which one do I want to choose? I want to choose this one because I don't want you to get in there. Pete Davidson stabbing himself in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. You literally watch this whole movie. It's these Gen Z kids doing the whole... Your energy right now is harming my vibe. Like, you're literally peaking my anxiety. And, like, you know, they pop Xanax, they pop Adderall, like, they're drinking, and then out of nowhere, Pete Davidson ends up being stabbed, and it's like, oh, shit, we can't go outside because it's a fucking hurricane. Is it the weirdo girl? We don't know. Is it the weirdo TikTok survival guy that's currently sleeping in the fucking indoor basketball room? Because apparently every American needs their own indoor basketball room. I mean, this house was pretty. It's a pretty big fucking house. But, like, you know, it was just a mixture of, like, the situation of the hurricane, the girls themselves being fucked up through, like, pharmaceutical drugs and then illegal drugs and then drinking. And then it's at the end, it, like, everything's going mental. Like, the girls are trying to defend themselves. And then out of nowhere, they just pick up a phone. Because both, like, there's two phones that have been landed in the mud. We know of the girl's phone, and she picks up what she thinks is her phone, but it's actually Pete Davidson's phone. And then the movie ends. And we're like, what the fuck? And, like, we actually saw people in the cinema who left. So what they didn't see was the Easter egg halfway through the credits in which she opens the phone. And then she watches what was last on the phone, which was Pete Davidson doing a TikTok. He was so embarrassed by Mr. Survival TikToker downstairs that he was like, I know how to fucking use this samurai sword. Swing, swing, swing. Fucking stabs himself. The main obstacle that starts this movie. Like, okay, so yeah, before we go, spoiler alert. I'm going to ruin some movies right now. So listen at your own peril. I've already ruined this one. It's one of those movies I can ruin it for you, but, like, there's no reason why you should watch this movie sober. Get some friends, get some beers, order some food, and just enjoy the fuck out of this movie. There is literally, like, is it a good movie? Absolutely fucking not. Is it a fun movie? Absolutely fucking yes. But Pete Davidson just stabs himself. And you just sit there flabbergasted. It's like, hang on. It was him dying that set this whole thing in motion. And it was like, and how dare a movie give you the message of the movie in the mid-credit Easter egg in which Gen Z needs to stop overthinking.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it, like, literal message, quote unquote. It's not that deep, fam. Like, literally, don't deep it. Like, the amount of times recently I've been told, don't deep it, from friends. Like, we're talking about something, you know, we're talking about, like, why I'm not getting messaged back by XYZ, usually some big booty bitch, and my mate would go, oh, man, don't deep it. I was like, how can I not deep it when someone's literally going in deep on her right now? Like,
well, I mean, There's no sense in you getting going deep in it then, and if that's the case, someone else is already doing it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But like, yeah, so literally, don't deep it, fam. It's not looking good, Brev. It's not looking good. Your woman is getting piped, Brev.
What I loved about the movie was the subversion of the slasher genre.
Mm.
Definitely not the best, but I thought it was definitely the most unique in terms of, you know, doing, you know, especially because when you're watching this movie, there's moments where you're like, there's someone there. Oh, there's something happening in the background.
Yeah.
But it's designed to fuck with the audience too.
Yeah.
Because you're like, who the fuck is, and then, you know, you see that and you're just like, Jesus, fuck, these people are so fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, and then you feel like an idiot because you fell for it too. It's like,
yeah,
because I remember
you 100% fall for it. By the end of the movie, you are also like, sort of, okay, someone's actually killing these birds, man. Like, shit. Like, someone's actually out for blood right now.
And it's crazy because I feel like they took a page out of the Tucker and Dale thing where fucking people just ended up killing themselves.
Yep. Half the girls end up killing themselves.
Like, all these fucking people die for literally no reason. It is fucking funny.
But tell you what, it's nice to, someone who is reinventing themselves is Maria Balakova?
Mm-hmm.
She's the voice of Cosmo in Guardians 3 upcoming next year.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Borat 2. She was the girl that got Rudy Giuliani to sort of like be a pedophile on her. But like she was one of the leads in this movie. Awesome actress. I think she's great. But this movie was led by like some top young female talent.
Yeah, for sure.
So hats off. It was very well written. Like, you know, it had an idea. It didn't take itself too seriously. I really enjoyed this movie. I think but then again, I can enjoy some movies that, you know, people think are shit. I like fucking American Pie movies, man. Like, everyone hates those movies.
Like, you're preaching to the fucking choir,
so,
dude.
Some people make it their job to hate those movies. I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Those movies didn't say shit about you. But yeah. So, moment number two. I'm not going to say what just popped into my head because, holy crap, we'd be cancelled. So, you go next. Take it away, Steve.
So for one of the movies that stood out to me, even though it's definitely on my list and it's like best movies, Top Gun Maverick. I love
the shit movie. I know what movie you're gonna pick, and I need to pick another moment.
And the moment I'm picking is when Maverick shows them how to do the run.
That's not the moment I picked. So can I still pick Top Gun Maverick after
this? Yeah.
That's so cool that we both picked the same movie, but a different moment. That's
different
awesome.
Different moment, yep. So, and it's funny because that, him doing that run, I don't know if you've seen, it's been all over the place. I've seen it where it's like, oh, so it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
They have to do this. They have to do this run and they have to hit the small target and then run the fuck away. It's like, yeah, okay, it's Star Wars. But seeing all these people, like, you know, they're doing these flights and doing these test runs that they can't do it and they're struggling and some of them are on, like, on the verge of passing out because the G-force as they're rising and shit, and you're like, fuck me, dude. Like, it's intense, and especially the way it's shot, because you feel like you're in the fucking cockpit and you're like, oh god, why are we doing this? Like, no one can fucking do this.
No, because they did film in the cockpit.
Yeah. And then Tom Cruise comes in, all 5'4", steps into his fucking plane and he does this shit and he owns it like a boss. And you're like, god damn, this man is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tom Cruise, all 5'4" of him, completely insane.
Yeah. Especially
but
when,
I loved
like,
it.
Tom Cruise, like Maverick does that because John Hamm, the dipshit that he is in this movie, it is saying, it's like, okay, we need to raise the bar just a little bit. And Tom, like, Maverick's like, no, you can't. If we do, they'll be seen by the artillery shells. It's like, if you're too slow, you'll be seen by radars. If you're too high, you're seen by the artillery. Like, Christopher McQuarrie does such a good job in this movie. I know he's not the director, but he has a lot to say in that movie than we realize. He built this movie. Like, who's the fucking villain, bro? They never say that. They never say it's North Korea. They never say it's Russians or the Chinese, even though using Chinese and Russian MiGs. But like, they never say who it is. Like, it's great. They're like, the villain is like their inability to do this run. The run is the villain. And like, how do you know if like it? Oh man, yeah, great fucking moment. Really great moment from a great movie. Although I just want to talk about the most unrealistic thing from this movie is that them kids at the start of the movie know all the words to Great Balls of Fire. Fuck off. Fuck off. They want to be singing fucking Drake or some shit. There's no way that all them kids know Great Balls of Fire.
And you know what? It's one of those moments where it's like, it's for me, it struck me as the hold my beer moment in movies this year. That's what that fucking was. At the end of the day, is when the motherfucker is seeing all these people struggle. He's being told, no, we need to make these changes because no one can do it. And he's like, hold my beer. Hold my beer. I'm going to do this shit real quick. And he does it. And he's like, did it. Suck it. Give me my beer.
That movie's built on moments, though. You've got like, I don't know if I want to, like, I'm going to talk about the moment I was going to pick, but I'm going to pick a different moment from a movie I saw recently. Let's just talk about, like, that is a movie of moments. You've got, like, the run actually being done when they have to invert the jet plane to go, like, they have to literally go upside down to go down into the pit. And, like, they don't, like, they have to do that twice. And not only do they need to do it twice, they need to get back up and over as well. And then you've got Miles Teller going in to save Maverick. You've got the Maverick Iceman moment, which is like probably one of the last times we'll see Val Kilmer on the screen. And if it was good, if that is the last time, perfect for him.
It was such a nice moment.
Especially it was like you hear that it was a moment that Tom Cruise fought for in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the fact that Val Kilmer sucks that he had to together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good moment. And then the moment I was going to pick was Maverick flies the Dark Star to Mach 10.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when you see...
That was pretty sick.
When you see it fly over Ed Harris.
And he just destroys them.
But he actually... that hut was actually destroyed, though. That actually happened. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, like, they weren't supposed to keep it in. Like, they wanted to do it again, but they didn't have the money because they couldn't pay for the fuel that was meant to go in Darkstar.
Yeah.
And then Maverick pushes it too far, and then it explodes in the sky, and it's like the whole Malcolm in the Middle firework moment. It's fucking great. And then you've got the dogfight training scene between Maverick and the kids. I mean, Glenn Powell just absolutely nails his character. Miles Teller nails his character. Like,
Glenn Powell did such a good job. He played a pilot in another movie.
Yeah, that's not out here yet. But like, I've seen. I was like, is this like, bro? Don't pigeonhole yourself like that, dude. That's not good.
Dude, this is hella typecasting.
But the moment I'm gonna change from now, from that Maverick flying Dark Star, I'm gonna change it to I saw the menu the other day. Now I'm not gonna spoil this movie because I'm pretty sure it's only been out for a couple of weeks, and I kind of want you to go see it. But there's this moment where, the movie is Ralph Fiennes plays like sort of this Gordon Ramsay style gourmet chef.
Oh, yeah, I've seen trailers for it.
Yeah, he's invited. Like, there's a movie star, there's a social media influencer, there's a wannabe critic, and there's actual critics, and then there's like the couple that have been to. Ralph Fiennes is chef, like he does like these secret like menu tastings, like he does pop-ups like around the world, but like this for whatever reason this one couple has gone to every single one, and then he's sort of like the night kind of like sort of takes a turn for the worst is what I'll say. But there's a moment where Anya Taylor-Joy's character is like she just looks at him. And, like, throughout the movie, she's had, like, a few issues with the food and that. And, like, there's just this moment where she just stands up, she's face to face, and like they've built her character as someone who like is literally voiceless in the grand scheme of things. And she just looks at Ralph Fiennes and goes, after all this bullshit, I'm still hungry. And Ralph Fiennes just goes, like he just drops and is like, all right then, what do you want? And this bitch looks Ralph Fiennes dead in the eyes and just goes, I want a burger. And this movie.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Movie that is built itself on being like, you know, foam kind of mashed potato, little neat, little pieces of duck breast. You know, like one of those kitchens that like cooks the chicken skin separate from the chicken, only to put the chicken skin back on the chicken, because that's how you're supposed to do it. And you know, they've got like the big ass posh you're not allowed to order the wine because the wine comes selected with the food, or like you get with this, we recommend you have a glass of this kind of thing, but it's a glass of like 1979, like Rosé Margaux or some shit. And it's like £1,000 per glass. Oh, of course you would recommend that, wouldn't you, dickhead? Like, so the fact that like this posh ass meal then just boom. And it's like, they do the same thing they've been doing for every dish, but with a burger. And if you don't come out of this cinema going, fuck me, I need a Five Guys, then you've watched the wrong movie. Because, like, he's like, but, like, it's more than the burger.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch this movie as some dumb viewer and just go, oh, that was a really good scene. But like when you act like if you've actually watched the movie, like the burger symbolizes so much more than actually just like the making of it. And it's kind of I'm not gonna spoil it, but like there's something else to do with the burger. Like, if you ever see this movie, let me know, and like I'll talk to you about it. And like, you know, for other people that like, you know, I know we like, but Ed, you know, you spoil Bodies came out summer. If you haven't seen it by now, that's your own fault. The menu came out 2 weeks. Came out 2 weeks ago. Well, as of recording, came out 2 weeks ago, and like Top Gun Maverick came out like end of spring this year. So shut the fuck up. If you haven't seen it, that's a you problem. If you haven't seen the menu, that is a problem of Cineworld, especially near me, only showing it at 8:50 p.m. It's only been in a week, and it's had one showing every day, 8:50 p.m. So how do I expect people to see this movie? I know someone who has seen it, but they got to see it like, when was the first time I came over to LA this year? June. I knew someone who saw it in they saw it before June, and they were saying the menu is their favorite movie of the year. So I've been excited for this since June.
Gotcha.
I finally got to see it, but there's a funny story about this movie, and I'm going to put one of my friends, right in the thick of it. We went out for lunch and we had a couple of beers, And then we went to go see Violent Night first. Yeah, we did a double bubble day. We went to go see Violent Night. Violent Night, John Wick with a Christmas overlay. It's fucking great. It's fucking hilarious. It's awesome. There's like a moment where it's like Home Alone, but real.
Yeah.
Like the character's like, what are you trying to do? Some Home Alone shit? Step on a ladder, boom, nail in the face. Like, it's fucking awesome. It's great. But we had beers in the cinema. So, beers with lunch, beers in the cinema. Come out of the cinema, go for a few more beers. After a few more beers, we go to TGI's for Long Island iced teas. Now, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, but I went to go sit down in the menu. I had my nachos, I had my Coke, and I was like, fucking ready for the next movie, man. My mate next to me, fucking snoozing, bruv. He wakes up the next day after we get home, and he's sending me like, mate, I'm so sorry. I was falling asleep in the movie. I don't remember that movie at all. I got real fucked up. I was like, mate, I mean, it's a shame that you didn't get to see the movie because it was great. But I saw it. I'm fine. Like, you know, like, I was having fun watching you. Like, whoa, what a moment.
Like, that was literally me when we went to go see Don't Worry, Darling. I was so fucked up. I was in and out of sleep, and it was like, it felt like the right movie to do that, so it's fine.
Didn't we like go to Las Iguanas in Resorts World?
Yep, and we had a couple drinks.
We had like six Long Island iced teas each or some shit.
We threw back a few, and then we went to go see this movie. And we were like, yeah, can't do it. And I'm like, I'm fine with it.
That movie was definitely a. I saw that movie twice in cinemas.
Oh, Christ. Why?
I don't know. That movie was, let's just say, Don't Worry, Darling is not in my, does have no, there's no top moments. It's not in my top five of the year.
Nope.
It's like,
nope.
We should do next week, top five forgettable movies. And it's like, so number five is Don't Worry, Darling. Number four is Don't Worry, Darling.
You know what's crazy? In building this list, I realized I didn't really see as many movies as I would have liked this year. Mm. I think it was more TV for me this year than movies.
I saw so many that I kind of struggled to make this list, man.
I struggled just because I couldn't remember what the fuck I saw. That's how
I remembered so much. I was like, shit, I want to put this in there.
No, but there was one moment that I really liked. So this is from Clerks 3.
Mm.
And the moment that is the auditions.
Okay.
So the story of Clerks 3 is Randall has a heart attack, and in surviving it, he wants to make a movie because, you know, all he does is talk about movies all fucking day. And he works at a video store, so that's what he does. He's surrounded by movies. So Dante convinces him, you know, fucking make one yourself. All right, writes the script, and he decides that he wants to hold auditions for it. And it's funny because, like, you look at the list. I found the list of the people who make cameos in it. So you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar, Fred Armisen, Melissa Benoist, Danny Trejo, Chris Wood, Ben Affleck, fucking Freddie Prinze Jr., thinking that it's an adult film, and Anthony Michael Hall. And it's all of these
and
people.
And the Impractical Jokers.
And the Impractical Jokers, yes, thank you. And it's all these people reading lines from Clerks. I'm not even supposed to be here today. And, like, there's some of them trying to convince them to do the fucking movie as a musical and singing. Yeah. And you're just like, oh my God, shut the fuck up.
Have you thought about doing this as a musical?
And it's so fucking funny. And then, like, they're singing and you're just like, and I'm looking at Randall and Dante's reactions to it. I'm right there with you guys. What the fuck? What the fuck is happening? Ben Affleck does a fucking... So Ben Affleck's character in this is a Boston John. And he's just walking. He's just doing his Boston accent. He's laying it in fucking thick. He goes full on Boston guy. You know, he just really gets fucking in there. And it's like, I love the fucking movie. The rest of the movie was fucking great. But there's that moment was the shit for me. And it's also like the amount of people that came out to do this for Kevin Smith shows me how much of an impact that dude makes. Like, yeah, he's not the biggest director in the world, but there are so many big names that fucking love this guy.
Yeah.
There's so many big names who would do shit like this for him. And I can't see these people doing it for anybody fucking else.
No.
And I thought that, I thought it was fucking great. It was an awesome fucking moment for me.
Yeah. No, it's a really good moment. It's a really touching moment in the movie as well, especially, and one of the most funniest moments in the movie as well.
Oh no, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Right. So, my next one. So I've got one backup if I want to, which I might change this one out for. So, A or B, Sebastian? Because mine are in no order.
B.
B. Predator versus the bear in Prey.
Mm.
We're in the POV of the girl stuck in like the dam where she's like sort of hidden herself. The bear's trying to like get at her, and then out of nowhere, the bear just disappears. And up until this point, the Predator's been like Alien in the first Alien movie. It's been like, you know, Jason in the first Friday the 13th. It's like Godzilla in the Godzilla remakes. Like, you know it's there. Like, the audience knows it's there. And this is like, and she's the only character that's like, is kind of aware of like some unearthly presence.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is the first time we see this thing like sort of really show its face, like against like an actual sort of, you know, for an actual fight. And it's the fact that the Predator struggles against this feral bear, but it's like there's just a moment where like, is the Predator struggling, or is he like, is he just having fun? Is he like, is he there for the fight?
He's enjoying it, yeah.
And then boom, like the wrist claws come out, and it's like this bear just gets fucking done. But up until that point, this bear's giving him the fucking works, man. Like, yeah. I don't know what bear they got for Cocaine Bear, but get that motherfucker.
That trailer is insane.
I am looking forward to Cocaine Bear.
It looks
dude.
So fucking funny.
Although in real life, the Cocaine Bear didn't kill anyone, so it's not like they're definitely using that inspired by.
Even
in real life, the bear only lived for 40 minutes. It took enough coke that it killed, like, it died after 40 minutes. But it was like, for 40 minutes, it was the most powerful predator in the world. And I was like, that is like you knew someone was going to read that. Like, I don't know if it's a Blumhouse movie, but this definitely feels like a Blumhouse from like 2012 kind of movie. Like, where they just like read articles and was like, that's a fucking movie. The way Michael Bay did Pain and Gain, he read that like sort of one article spread from like the Miami Herald and was like, I could turn that into a movie. Yeah, like I remember seeing this movie, and like it was from that point on where like I was on the edge of my seat and I was like, this movie is about to get going. And then you got the Predator just wiping out like the French army, which as an Englishman, I was just laughing at, because, you know, there's nothing better than the French just getting ripped to fucking shreds, treated like fucking garlic eating twat wankers that they are. Like, look, if you're a fan of the podcast, you know that I don't like the French. It's built into my blood. It's going to be there to the day I die. Even on my deathbed, I'm going to ask my kids, I'll be like, people still speak French? And my kids are going to go, no, Dad, my language died long ago. And be like, snail-eating dickheads. Beep. Like, already know what my last words are going to be before I die. It's not going to be, I love you, son.
Snail-eating dickheads.
It's not going to be, I love you, son, or like, I had a great life. It's going to be making sure that the French aren't here anymore.
Christ.
Fuck them. And the fact that, you know, this movie, you know, the director fought the same way. It could easily be the Spanish. No, make it the French. And like, I'm laughing, and my mum looks at me whilst we're watching this movie, and she goes, why are you laughing? And I was like, French are getting fucked up. They spoke a big game, and they couldn't rise to the challenge. Like, chat shit, get banged. Like,
oh man, that fucking movie was awesome. Yeah, like, I remember like hearing all the hype, and I was worried about it. But Jesus Christ, a movie that lives up to the hype.
I pressured you to watch this movie.
So good. It was so good.
Yep.
It was so fucking good. I loved it.
Right. Moment number four?
Yes, sir.
Jeez.
So this one, it was just really fucking funny to me. So this comes from the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
I never actually saw this, but I don't care. So tell me.
it's a really fucking funny movie. And so in this scene, Nick Cage, you know, he's playing himself in this movie.
Maybe.
And he gets invited to this rich fucking guy's mansion. It's his birthday, and he's paying Nick Cage like $1 million to just show up and hang out. And the guy's being played by Pedro Pascal, who I fucking love and I think is amazing. And he invites him, and he's essentially trying to get Nick Cage to like read his script and, you know, want to make a movie with him. But Nick Cage gets intercepted by feds, and they try to convince him that this dude's dirty. He's a drug runner. He does all this other shit. So they ask Cage to stay and to become his friend and to try to gather intel for them. So they're hanging out, and they're driving around in Spain, and they decide to do acid.
Sounds
so they're,
like a great
they're
idea.
They do acid, and they're driving around, and they're walking around, and Nick Cage, he's just kind of like, they see these two guys, just two random dudes, just sitting in a cafe, they're drinking coffee. He's like, you know, those guys have been there for a while. I think they're staring at us. So they slowly get up from their seats. They start walking away really quickly. And they turn a corner and they turn back, and they happen to see the guys as walking. It's like, oh my God, they're following us. But they're walking in the opposite direction. So Cage and Pascal take off running, and they're running. They're losing their shit, and they're running. And they come to this wall and try to climb up it. And Pascal's like, you just go. Just go. The world needs Nick Cage. They don't need me. Just go. And Cage goes full Cage, dude. He's screaming and he's hitting the wall. He's like, no, I will never forget you. He jumps off the wall and he's like trying to catch his breath. And then Pedro Pascal comes across around the wall. He's like, oh, we could have just walked around. Oh, okay. And it is such a stupid fucking sequence, but the whole movie is just really funny. Mm. I highly recommend it. It is Nick Cage at his Nick Cagiest, because he's being him. And fucking Neil Patrick Harris plays his agent,
Disney
and it makes
over
so much
here.
Sense.
I might check it out.
And I saw it on the fucking flight to the UK.
Yeah, I remember. I just like, I can't watch movies for the first time on airplanes anymore. Like, those airplane headphones, no matter what class you're sitting in, first class, business class, cattle class, like the headphones you get. Those headphones are fucking wank. And like, if there's one thing I don't need, is this constant like in my headphones, because they're not noise cancelling.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Like, I need to.
No, it was. It's definitely worth a watch.
50% of cinema is sound.
If you can't fucking hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Where do I want to go next? I'm going to leave this one off my list. I feel like I've spoken about this a few times on the list. I was going to do the Batmobile reveal in Batman, but I feel like I've spoken about that a few times. Everyone knows I love that. Like, that's a great fucking moment. Like, that's not just a moment for 2022. That's a moment in cinema as a whole. The fact that the Batmobile is a character and not just an item to be used. Like, I fucking love it. Like, I love that thing. So I'm going to go with... So yeah, I did A or B last time. One or two?
One.
One? The Northman versus the Mound Dweller in Northman.
Okay.
So this moment is Alexander Sarsgaard is already like sort of sworn vengeance on his father's killer. And yep. he's been told in like some sort of a vision quest that he needs to sort of like as a warrior become worthy of like fighting his father's killer. So he's like, okay, one, I need a weapon. I need a weapon that like, because like he's been told that he's gonna pull like a sword of fire. And, like, he's going to plunge that into his father's killer and that will kill him. So he needs, like, a sort of a fire-retardant sword. So he's seen the vision of this, like, sort of skeleton king in a throne in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. So he goes out venturing one evening and he sort of falls down this sort of cave and boom, there it is. This giant motherfucker sitting in a throne. But it's like it's a skeleton. It was like, okay, cool, I'm just going to take this sword and I'm going to go. But, like, the moonlight sort of just shifts ever so slightly above the holy crate, and boom, it hits the Mound Dweller. And, like, the fact that this thing's called the Mound Dweller, because, like, when it sort of zooms out into the big wide, he's actually in, like, this sort of hilltop shire kind of thing.
Yeah.
Boom, moonlight hits the Mound Dweller, and you just hear, like, the bones just, like, sort of cracking. And it's like, it feels like Lord of the Rings. It feels like Skyrim. It feels like Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Like, it's like all I'm hearing in my mind is like, I could be listening to this track from this band over this moment and it would fucking work.
Yeah.
And I did that with like five different pieces of music in my mind. I could be listening to Amon Amarth. I could be listening to Enzo Theorem. It's like this tight enclosed spot. The Mound Dweller sort of takes back the sword and Alexander Sarsgaard has to sort of use cunning and wit to kind of get the Mound Dweller to sort of die. And then he does so. Like it's like a good 5-10 minute fight. Sarsgaard's getting the shit kicked out of him here and there. But then boom, it's over. And then out of nowhere, Sarsgaard has the sword and the Mound Dweller's back in the throne, like dead, like he never even fucking moved. And I was like, that is like Norse mythology, like in a nutshell. Like shit didn't actually happen, but like the way it's carved out on the runes in a sort of like hypothetical kind of way, like, you know, you gotta fight the like the non-existent Mound Dweller to get the fire retardant sword to plunge it in the fiery lava lake from the Icelandic volcano so you can defeat your father's killer. I was like, that's the way stories are carved out on runes. We know that because that, you know, we can actually go to Norway, Finland and Denmark, find these rune stones and translate them. And that is literally how they translate. They translate as stories. It's fucking awesome. It's so accurate. It's so amazing. And just the way this moment is filmed compared to the rest of the movie, that like where the greens have popped, Alexander Sarsgaard's hair is popped in all of colors. Like Anya Taylor-Joy's like blonde hair is striking as fuck. Like the color just stands out in this movie. And boom, this Mound Dweller fight, it's so dark that it's like it's black and white because like it's not really real, so they had to match that with the camera work and the color. Oh man, really good moment. If you like, if you're not going to see the movie as a whole, like I imagine you could go somewhere online and just type in Northman versus the Mound Dweller, and it's a really good fight scene, especially if you ever have a like a sword fight scene where you need a character who like sort of is essentially losing but then wins. That's a good fight scene to watch.
You know what's great? What I love is that this moment perfectly lines up with my last moment because it is also a fight scene.
Oh, nice!
It's a very different type of fight scene. It is a fight scene. It is Wayman versus the security guards and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, the fanny pack fight?
Yep.
I love that fight.
It is such a cool fucking fight scene.
Yep.
Ke Huy Quan fucking kills it. And the way it is shot, you know what's fucking crazy? My favorite shot from that isn't even a kick or a punch being thrown. It is when he's swinging the bag on the floor and we get the POV from the fucking fanny pack as it's like circling around people. It is so good. It is so good. And it is so, I get the Jackie Chan inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
I get fucking Donnie Yen inspiration. I get fucking Raid inspiration because it's also a really brutal fight. Yep. Like every time that fucking fanny pack hits someone, it sounds like it fucking hurts.
It sounds like it hits someone.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, it sends fuckers flying all over the place, like, knocking fucking cubicles down and locking fucking into walls and shit. And it's just such a good fight scene. The choreography is amazing. Ke Huy Quan, man, I'm so happy that his career is being resurged because, goddamn, the man deserves it. That performance was fucking phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I mean, Everything Everywhere All at Once is a great fucking movie. I loved it. I was not expecting to love it as much as I do.
A24,
but goddamn,
they love doing their movies.
A24, they don't give a fuck, man. I feel like they give love to the people that don't get it enough, and they give them the opportunity to show everyone's like, this is why you gotta be watching me.
Yeah, man.
This is why you need to be watching me.
Yeah, 100%.
And this fight scene, if you haven't seen it, please go. If you don't want,
just go.
Same.
No,
if you don't want to watch the whole movie.
You need to go see this whole movie.
This movie. The hot dog fingers aside, you know, it's a great fucking movie.
Jamie Lee Curtis, great fucking
performance. Jamie Lee Curtis has a great fucking fight scene.
Yeah, she really does. And becomes a character that sort of has a really heartwarming ending.
Mm-hmm. It was really hard for me to pick because it was, so for me, it was a toss up between this moment and the moment where Michelle Yeoh's character and her daughter are rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was just a really, it was such a beautiful moment. Almost nothing is said, but you feel everything. And it's just these rocks.
It's just a pair of fucking rocks, bro.
It's just a pair of fucking rocks. And you're like, God damn, this is...
Michelle Yeoh, if you haven't seen it... Talk about an actress who's like... I don't really know much from what she did, like, when she was just starting acting. But, like, her career resurgence is huge.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with her stuff, like, pre-Crouching Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, everything since. Like, I've seen, you know, where she pops up. But, yeah, no, she's on another level. Like this,
I'm pretty sure she's like, didn't she just win like Time's Person of the Year or some shit?
I'm not sure, but she definitely, if she's not in fucking award contention, then what the fuck is the point of awards?
I mean, like, you can't put out something this good. Is up there in terms of movies of the year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, Marvel is struggling to uphold its own multiverse right now. A24 mm-hmm. literally did it in a whole movie and fucking nailed it.
Yep.
A24 said, hold my beer.
Hold my beer!
And literally forgot that Marvel was holding the beer and then went to the bar to go get a whiskey instead because whiskey's better than beer. And at the end of the night, Marvel just looks over and goes, you never got your beer back. I'm still here holding it. And A24's like, you didn't drink it yourself? No.
It'll help.
Better than that cider you're drinking, I'll tell you what. So, my last moment. I feel like it's good that this has come to my last moment because you saw this movie because of me. Mm-hmm. It was whilst you were down here.
Yeah.
It's a moment for men.
God damn it, I fucking knew it! I fucking knew it!
Which moment do you think I'm choosing?
I'm genuinely afraid. Oh, no, I know which one.
You know, which moment? Which one? I want you to guess.
In the pub.
Oh, come on, Jeffrey.
Hey.
Fire up the engines. No. As much as
damn
I love
it.
That moment. As much as I love that moment. Come on, Jeffrey.
Damn it. That would have been so fire fucking perfect.
No, I've chosen the knife in the door.
Oh.
When the naked guy puts the hand through the door and Jesse Buckley's defense is to like sort of and then you're thinking like you're just going to hear some screaming. You don't hear screaming. Like the blood isn't spurting out yet. Jesse Buckley's just there. It's like, what's happening? And then it's just this bird's eye view. It's not really a bird's eye. Well, it's bird's eye, but it's like it's close up, but like high angle kind of shit.
Yeah.
Camera's just looking down. The lighting is minimalist at best. And you just see the knife in his hand.
Oh.
And it just starts like the crunching and the sloshing as the hand just is like being forced through the knife. And then like seconds later, this guy breaks in and he's like, "You hurt me." And he just hands holds up this floppy penis of a fucking hand, bro. Like, and you're just like,
oh god.
Like, I kind of like those moments are great. I love the Jeffrey fire up the engines moment because of like this guy's sitting in the pub. It's like the same actor's playing every single guy character, and he's just there doing a crossword. So come on, Jeffrey. Fire up the engines. Can't even say it without laughing, man. The reason I love that moment is because, like, I'm going to have to bring that moment in, like, when I'm giving, like, a eulogy at my dad's funeral or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is, like, that is literally my dad. I've seen him there struggling on Sudoku. If it's not 4, then it's 6. But this one's 7, 8, 9. So this has to be 5. And he's there, he's struggling, like he's talking out to himself. I'm there trying to work, and I'm like, "Dad, what the fuck are you talking about, bro?" And he's like, he doesn't do Sudoku, he does the killer Sudoku. Like, and that's like mini Sudokus in a Sudoku box. Like, there's no one number. Like, you choose possibilities of numbers. And apparently, that's winning. I don't get it. And then it'll go from that, like, before lunch, after lunch, he'll go to a crossword, in which he's like, Northern Town, 4 letters. And I'd like, Berry, where you come from, you dickhead. Like, if you're going to say the clue out loud, I'm going to start thinking about it with you. And he's over there, I'm over here, he's trying to do what he's doing, I'm trying to work, and we're both firing up the engines. But then there's also, like, the same character has the, scrumping. No. Mustn't do that. Because fucking scrumping in, like, the little countrysides is frowned upon because every apple tree is owned by someone. You can't just go over to an apple tree and pick up an apple, and then you got the whole Adam and Eve thing as well. It's like this character is trying to get this girl to stay in his Airbnb, have a great time. Scrumping? No. Mustn't do that. And I'm just like, and this, like, when I tell you this guy is Rory fucking Kinnear, who literally anyone only knows as M's fucking side bitch from James Bond. And he plays every guy character pretty much, besides the husband, who, you know, really doesn't end well for.
You know, swan dive.
But, like, the best thing about, like, every injury a character suffers in this movie mimics one of the injuries that guy suffers from when he falls in his suicide. Like, that's not like you can see that, you cannot see that. Like, you know, like, I see that because, you know, and you probably see that because we're both filmmakers, we're both creatives. Like, we're literally, like, we remember moments more than the film itself. So, you know, if you're sitting here listening to me and Sebastian talk about these great moments, and you may not have picked them out as moments yourself. I mean, that's why, you know, it's called freeballing. You know, it's Sebastian's opinion, it's my opinion. You know, me and Sebastian are literally sort of, we've been designed, inceptioned, you know, through education, through watching many movies, you know, watching TV, you know, giving each other recommendations. And like, sort of, sometimes I'll give Sebastian a recommendation. It's like, just so I can talk to him about one moment in a movie. It's like, I don't give a shit whether you like the movie, make the movie 1 out of 10. But what did you think of that one moment, Brev? And then like, we'll have like this whole conversation.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and that's the beauty of cinema.
It's literally why we're doing this podcast.
It's literally why we're doing this podcast. You know, this podcast is like, you know, this podcast has moments.
Yep.
You know, my friends
will definitely have moments.
My friends will talk to me and be like, yo, you know, like Ryan calls us out on, you know, his, you know, calling him out on his, you know, Ryan versus the popcorn. Like,
oh, man.
Yeah, man. You know, and 2022 was it was a great. You know, some people may say it wasn't too good for cinema. You know, cinema's still struggling post COVID, but
yep.
I tell you what, we weren't short of some fantastic moments in cinema.
Very, very true. All right, everyone, fire up the engines, subscribe, rate, share, and we'll see you next time. And I just destroyed Ed with that one.
But that fire up the engines is going to become the show's first catchphrase. Come on, yes. Sebastian. Fire up the engines. See, I'm going to say it like that every single time. I can't not.
Oh, shit. All right, take it easy, everyone. On this trip, now more like you're throwing out the scripts.
Come on, man, come join us on the trip. I'm sorry, now we're throwing out the scripts. I hope you don't charge a penny. I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.